littered the country with more than 15 million mines that take Afghan lives every day. It followed by infighting among the warlords and former communist regime militia, further adding to the misery of our people. People lost their lives along with their dignity and self-respect in the past 2 decades. With the emergence of Taliban, the reactionary force that dealt severe blow to the local bandits and warlords, the cycle of death did not end. Afghans faced a much disastrous future when they were condemned to a silent genocide of uranium weapons. In fact, the conspiracy of the elite in the United States not only resulted in the deadly attacks of September the 11th, 2001, followed by the invasion of Afghanistan, but also it has begun to tell the world that the use of nuclear weapons is as commonplace as conventional arsenal. It is necessary to reflect on this and other tragedies in the current global anarchy, because we are facing a global menace eager to use any means to reach its evil ends. The significance of this period in human history becomes evident when one encompasses the magnitude of the disaster imposed on people who chose not to be enslaved in the chains of the New World Order. In essence, the United States responds to rejection from the weak nations such as Afghanistan to the means of weapons of mass destruction. In the accompanying perpetual debt, condemning the entire nation, or nations for that matter, forever. After all, in the few billion years required for the half-life of uranium, the existence of nations as we know them today is inconceivable, because at the present rate, the speed of contamination by far exceeds any hopes of recovery, especially when the contamination consists of weapons of mass destruction, namely uranium. Afghan people have been condemned for being different, courageous, and have the dignity for self-determination, which is something quite foreign to the coward establishment of the USA and her allies. The truth of this matter becomes evident when the following statement by one of the victims of US's aggression states, and I quote, "What else do the Americans want? They killed us, they turned our newborns into horrific deformations, they turned our farmlands into graveyards and destroyed our homes. On top of all that, their planes fly over and spray us with bullets. We have nothing to lose. We will fight against them the same way we fought against the previous monster, i.e. the Soviet Union." And end of quote. The courage this poor peasant exhibited is a priceless commodity that you, one or no one for that matter, would find on the New York Stock Exchange. In fact, uranium weapons may physically disable Afghans of all ages, but it will never cripple their determination to uphold their sovereignty and self-respect. Unfortunately, the pain that these poor souls endure is not lost amidst the heroism they exhibit daily. They live in utter devastation, wherein 1 in 5 children do not make it to their 5th birthday, while the average life expectancy for adults stands at 45. As if all this misery was not enough, the US and its criminal allies had to subject the entire nation to a collective death sentence, a tragedy from which recovery is unimaginable. Moreover, to add insult to injury, the global menace had to call this genocide liberation. The bunker buster bombs contaminated the underground water system upon which locals rely, especially in times of drought. Afghans inherited large number of cave systems from generations ago and were part of daily livelihood and sustenance of communities all over the country. Similarly, various mountain regions constitute extensions of local ecosystems. Local populations depend on these mountains for water, wood, and even cultivation. Some people even cultivate some arable lands in the lower steppes of some of the mountain ranges. This is especially the case in southeast and east of the country, part of the Pashtun or Afghan land where large mountain ranges dominate the land. Therefore, it is impossible for the inhabitants of those areas to avoid exposure to deadly contaminants. Tragically, the continuous air raids on suspected hideouts of Afghan resistance forces subject locals to daily dose of fresh uranium dust. With this in mind, there are two issues that require attention. First, the continuous bombing has to stop, which is essentially wishful thinking on our part. Bombing in air raids of different types would continue as long as there are resistant fighters challenging U.S.'s crimes. Second, something has to be done to eventually pave the way for some sort of ameliorative action, if you will, if any, for the survival of the current inhabitants and long-term prospects of safety for a future generation. The second issue compelled me to form the Afghan Dune Recovery Fund with the hopes of paving the way for some sort of, and I in quotation, cleanup, which of course is not possible, but I will elaborate on that in a minute. However, I know this cleanup matter is impossible and it is inconceivable, in fact, to have a complete cleanup, because this has become the fiber of the land and what it contains, the ground and its environment. Meanwhile, the planning process for such massive undertaking requires a continuous influx of data, which would serve as the feedback mechanism for any strategy we choose to adopt. Eventually, a dynamic database would prove to be invaluable. To achieve such a database, I propose the installation of permanent monitoring devices, initially in hotspots, followed by installation of such monitoring stations all over Afghanistan. This, we believe, to be the most sensible initial steps toward the long-term amelioration efforts. The significance of such database would appear lame at the outset. However, the long-term benefits would not only be crucial for any cleanup, quote-unquote, but also would serve as a wealth of epidemiological information, necessary data bank for researchers worldwide. Unfortunately, any such undertaking requires funding, which is quite difficult at this time because most potential donors follow the flow, namely the demands of the U.S. government. Finally, let me focus on the relevance of international institutions at the current crossroad in history. At present time, the international institutions, international law, are considered worthless, dealing with poor nations in their claim of injustice. In fact, a world institution such as the United Nations has become a mere approval stamp for the United States and the powerful. In light of these fundamental global changes, the poor nations would grant no credence to the notion of international law in the United Nations, because the survival of poor nations is taken hostage by this global fallacy, namely the United Nations as we see it today. It is my first firm opinion, it is not a prerequisite to be a strong nation, militarily speaking, to stand for one's right, that is. If the new world order has institutionalized this new paradigm of forced socioeconomic underdevelopment, it has failed to fully hinder avenues whereby the weak would contest its grievance. The grassroots movement worldwide, with the assistance of the internet as the medium of communication, could raise voices of the weak nations effectively, as is evident today from our activities at this conference. Since the use of uranium weapons has undoubtedly affect all aspects of Afghan societies, people, and their habitat, a mere struggle of resistance is not enough, because the use of uranium weapons entails the perpetual condemnation of an entire nation to a silent death, a death that would linger upon us for generations to come, the most precious of our possession. The children of Afghanistan would be the worst of the victims in this tragedy. What is all this genocide for, is my question. Simply to gain wealth? That is the manifestation of true evil, a practice fitting for Lucifer, the Satan. And in this case, the Lucifer, the Satan, is the United States of America and her allies. Unfortunately, the global menace, the United States of America, has chosen to be that Lucifer aimed at mass murdering and destroying nations. With that end, I'd like to point to a couple of points quickly before the rest of the folks here can make their statements. When I talk about monitoring stations, you need to keep in mind, do we understand that it is inconceivable to have cleanup per se, to clean everything utterly, completely? What we need to do, as in every action, any strategy, any policy that one formulates, it needs a fundamental information basis, a fundamental database. That is the same way valid for ameliorative efforts in Afghanistan. Such database would serve as a refutation as well as confirmation of our efforts. If we choose to initiate some action, the results of that action would be confirmed or refuted by the magnitude of radiation or the dust or otherwise in other aspects of the environment that we monitor. So it is utterly essential. And also, you need to keep in mind and look at this problem in medical terms. Give you an example, the AIDS phenomenon. AIDS was an acute illness. AIDS was a condition from which escape was impossible. With the collection of different medicine, now that problem has turned into a chronic problem. We want to turn that death sentence of uranium weapon to a chronic problem. We want to help the human homeostatic mechanism to elevate the victims from utter destruction to at least a degree of sustenance. That is where we want to approach this problem in a holistic manner. You see, as a physician looks at the body and a problem exists there, that physician cannot treat that one aspect of the body because it will not work, because a body is an interconnected mechanism and it can be felt in every aspect of the body. The same way, in Afghanistan, we need to take into account the people, the environment, what the environment entails, the soil, the water, the vegetation, and also we need to resort to unconventional measures of treatment. What I mean by unconventional measures of treatment is that many scholars with whom I will contact upon my return back to the USA has proposed ways, but thus far, not clear, but I'm quite certain from the sincerity that I have received that there is some substance to this, that mechanisms are in place to cleanse the body relatively from uranium. When I say relatively, you can't think in totality. Remember, nothing can be fixed, clean, or otherwise 100%. And the same thing is especially true of uranium. If we can treat the patients, the victims, on the one hand, and deal with the environmental aspect of it, for example, there is one technology, let me quickly point to that before my time runs. It is. Okay, give me a minute or two, I'll be done. There are technologies, for example, when you clean the soil, there are thousands of tons of soil. Cleaning that would require getting rid of all that soil, storing that soil, just for the sake of argument. Technology exists to isolate contaminant soil, contaminant dirt, from the ones that is not contaminated. I have been in contact with the individuals from Department of Energy who have done similar actions in different parts of the United States, and they have given me some suggestions that we can employ. You see, Afghans cannot run from their place. They are stuck. It's their homeland. We can't just say it cannot happen. It has to happen. There has to be a way. And I'm quite certain there will be a way. We have to turn uranium problem into a chronic problem. We cannot eradicate it. That is a fact. Because we are condemned to a perpetual death. But we can at least prolong the life and the livelihood of few. But keep in mind one thing. And I conclude this, my talk. The U.S. may be partially successful. The U.S. may be partially successful. It might kill us all by their uranium weapons, but you cannot defeat the people of Afghanistan, because we welcome death as much as we welcome life. That is the difference between us and the American forces. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm very anxious to hear about these technologies. I hope next in a workshop or so.